The
donut
box.
The donut box.
Today we are unboxing another letter. We're gonna dive deep into health anxiety and cholesterol. So I hope that you are strapped in and ready to listen. My name is Jo Sebastian. I'm a registered nutritionist and dietitian, and you're listening to The Donut Box, where we unbox stories and talk about things we usually do not talk about. And today, it's another letter. So if you're ready, let's unbox it. It's Jo.
And it's Elijah.
And you're listening to
The Donut Box.
Okay, another episode.
Let's get some, what do you call that? Thumb snaps.
What?
You don't do that? You've never done that before? You know, in the poetry stuff? Like, yeah.
The poetry stuff. What are you doing? Okay. Well, today is going to be another letter sender episode. I just want to thank you guys for sending your letters into the Donut Box Pod Instagram. If anybody else wants to share their feelings, thoughts, or just wants to know more about health, nutrition, don't forget to send your letters in at the Donut Box Pod on Instagram.
Yeah, we love seeing your guys' experience, and hopefully our podcast helps you out in any way, shape, or form.
Yes, I hope so too. And this letter is going to be long, so we're just going to jump straight into it. Okay, here we go. Hello, I really enjoy listening to your podcast. I hope you will have an episode on managing cholesterol. I recently learned that I have bad cholesterol, and it's upsetting and makes me anxious. Hope you can help.
Here are my concerns. Number one, before knowing about it, I've been slowly starting to have a good relationship with food. Not being restrictive with food, I also stopped demonizing food. But after, I noticed myself relapsing to an unhealthy relationship with it. Can you suggest how I can heal from this and how I can enjoy food again without being restrictive? So that was number one. Number two, after knowing about it, I have been super conscious. I asked my meal plan suppliers about the oil they use. Although they are vegan and plant-based, I refrained from ordering if they use coconut oil or palm oil. Is this too much? Number three, I'm an active person and I don't eat much fat from pork. Although, I usually eat processed foods because they are more accessible. So learning about it was shocking for me. Sometimes I'd be ashamed of myself and wonder why despite my active lifestyle. And four, lastly, I have bad anxiety. I overthink whether my cholesterol is manageable. I get death anxiety at times. My LDL and non-HDL levels are high, but not at critical points. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on some of these, and if there are too many.
Okay, so there's a lot, but I really love how this letter sender really pinpointed each one at a time. That makes it a lot easier for us as well to go through.
Yeah.
Well, we'll start first with the question of managing cholesterol. Okay, so let's start off with that. Elijah, what is high cholesterol essentially, and what does this mean for us if you have high cholesterol?
Well, make it simple. You have two types of cholesterol, right? You have your HDL, or high density lipoprotein, that's what it means, and your LDL, which is your low density lipoprotein, and HDL being the quote unquote good cholesterol, and the LDL, your bad cholesterol. So why are they called good or bad? So your good cholesterol, your HDL, is a transporter that takes the cholesterol from around your body, from your peripheries, like anywhere else in the body, and brings it back into the liver to metabolize it. While your LDL transports the cholesterol from your liver outside, anywhere but the liver. So, okay, why is LDL bad? Because when you have more cholesterol buildup anywhere else in your blood vessels,
if you have a lot more LDL,
more
essentially,
than HDL, and you have a lot of cholesterol in your bloodstream, they end up turning into what you call plaques. And these plaques, they adhere to your blood vessels, usually your arteries, and that can cause what you call an occlusion. Occlusion meaning a blockage. And when that happens, you are prone to having heart attacks or strokes or any type of occlusion in the body, which inhibits blood flow, which can cause your tissue to die, basically.
Yes. So your HDL is kind of like a sweeper in a way. It takes cholesterol around the body, brings it to the liver. The LDL on the other side does the opposite. And they're not bad. Okay. Technically, it's called bad just because in excess of it, it has a negative impact to our body. But generally, LDL is not bad because it does serve a purpose of transporting things around your body.
Yeah. There's a reason it's there. It's not just there to do something bad.
Yeah, it's not just like, oh, yes, I'm just a bad thing in the body. Yeah. So you also actually have like your VLDL, which is a very low density lipoprotein, and all of these things that you'll often see in your lipid profile. So when somebody is asking if they want or how they can manage their cholesterol, it's usually because that lipid profile shows some form of anomalies or raised level of LDL or cholesterol or even triglycerides being raised, which has some concerns to either any other health condition or even lifestyle in itself. Okay. So I'm going to discuss a few things to look out for when you're trying to manage cholesterol through nutrition. Okay. And this is just general guideline. If you have any other specific needs and concerns, best to consult your dietitian face to face or online in your own team. Okay. So usually when we want to manage our cholesterol, we want to increase your HDL and then decrease your LDL. And that can be done by incorporating more unsaturated sources of fats. So this will be unsaturated oils or plant oils like olive oil, canola oil, soybean oil, and also nuts and seeds or fatty fish like salmon, sardines, and tuna. Because your unsaturated fats really help increase HDL and decrease your LDL. Number two, we want to incorporate more fiber into our diet. Fiber helps get rid of excess cholesterol in the body. So it can be a very, very, very helpful tool. If you're somebody who notices, I don't really eat my fruits and veggies, this can be one of those habits that we can try to build. And another thing is you can also focus on increasing phytosterols in your diet. What are phytosterols? These are essentially plant cholesterols. And because they are kind of the same form as cholesterol, they will be the ones that you absorb rather than your cholesterol from food. So it can be very helpful. And usually it's similar to the sources of unsaturated fats, being your plant oils, nuts and seeds, also including now your whole grains and your legumes. How about, Elijah, from like a lifestyle perspective, what are some things we can be more mindful of as we manage our cholesterol?
In terms of lifestyle, I guess it's get exercise, move your body around, because it has been proven that a specific amount of exercise, you know, daily can help with one, heart health, keeps your heart healthy, keeps the blood moving, right? And by exercising, it can actually make the processes in your body more efficient, is how I would say it, right?
So that's one thing, right? Movement is very important.
Yeah. By the way, did you know there have been recent studies that increasing your HDL isn't actually as important as lowering your LDLs? The impact of, in terms of like, heart health has been seen more effective in lowering LDL than increasing HDL. But then again, if you increase unsaturated fats and decrease saturated fats, it'll work either way, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of habits really, by association, end up increasing your HDL as well as decreasing your LDL. But that makes sense because I don't think we need to increase our HDL like past normal levels or anything like that. But it's good to take a look at that overall. Aside from movement, sleep is actually really, really important because when you lack sleep or when you're constantly stressed even, your cortisol goes up. And when cortisol is up, it also tends to increase your cholesterol. So I think it's because cortisol and cholesterol sound the same. Just like rearrange the sound. No. But yeah, so sleep is a very important key thing as well. And I wanted to add for the nutrition aspect, adding more plant-based sources of foods can also help us decrease your saturated fat intake and increase your unsaturated fat intake as well. So yes, all right. Now that we have a little bit of a view on managing cholesterol, let's go into the specifics of our letter sender's letter, starting with the first part. They were developing a healthy relationship with food before they even knew what like a healthy relationship with food is. I like this because I think technically we're all born with like a healthy relationship with food. It's just that as we grow up, all of these other messages come in and it kind of shifts your view on food and like taking care of your body.
No, actually, like thinking about it, that's the way we should live, right? Like where you just see food as food, right? Versus it's kind of like no one's ever evil until they're taught evil, you know?
That's a tricky thing because people are on both sides of the spectrum of this where they say everyone's born good and then we're taught to be bad. And other side, people think we're all bad and we just make decisions to be good.
For me, I think everyone's neutral, right? Until they swing whatever way. But in terms of food, it's like, yeah, just eat food because you enjoy it. But it doesn't mean that you think this food is better than this food or this food is bad. It's just that no one ever taught you that this food is quote unquote bad. So your relationship with it would be neutral, right? You just eat it because you want to eat, you're hungry, and you want energy. And I feel like that's what we all need to strive for, where we see food as food, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely the goal, and that's definitely how we start out as well. It's really just a lot of messaging and a lot of things that very much take over. And that's actually something that we try to go back to now. How do we get back to that place of having a healthier relationship with food, having peace around food? So they mentioned that they notice a relapse to an unhealthy relationship with food. And I think it's important to tap into first, where is this coming from? What are some of these activators that's causing this unhealthy relationship with food again? I don't know if we can ever be truly healed in our relationship with food. Like for me, going through all of those like restrictive diets, I don't think that I'm fully healed at this point in my life. I don't know if I will ever be, because there's always going to be that voice in the back of my head that's going to tell me to do this and do that and this is bad and all those things. But we just get better at lowering the volume of that voice and then making our own voice louder. So that's one of the things that we have to remember. It's really focusing on your voice being louder throughout the years as you're healing your relationship with food. I don't know if we can ever truly be fully healed because messages of diet culture is everywhere, you know?
Yeah, I mean, in my experience, you know, when you've been so scarred, and like people was like, oh, scarred, like you just have an eating disorder or whatever, like yeah, it's scarring because
fibrosis.
Yeah, fibrosis. Okay, what? yeah, it's fibrosed into my mental health. No, but you know, when you live half or more than half of your life where you're scared to eat, or you don't want to get fat, or you don't want to do this, do that because you're scared, it's really damning in the way that when you try to heal, when you try to get better, there's always that inkling. There's always that voice at the back of your head saying, no, you shouldn't eat that. No, go and upchuck that because you ate too much.
Burn it off.
Mm-hmm. Burn it off. Go exercise. You're not good enough. Those thoughts, those voices are still ingrained in my head. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saying that I'm not good enough, saying that I'm getting fat, or saying that you're not healthy, saying all of this, all of that. But it's at the end of the day, it's up to me to suppress that voice and, you know, take myself out of that.
Yeah, it's more like challenging that voice as much as possible, right? So it's definitely a process, not saying that it's going to like happen overnight where you're just like mute on that other voice. But what I mean by this is, well, first, it's important to remember that wherever you are now, even if you feel like it's a setback, it's still way more progress than where you initially started. And it's something for everybody to remember, that you're never going to go back or regress fully to where you were before because you have learned so much already. There will be times where, okay, you go back to your old habits or anything like that. But it's important to remember that you're not necessarily setting yourself back in any way, shape, or form. It's just part of that journey. So what I meant is try to check in with what is causing your unhealthy relationship with food. What are the activators in your life that may be doing this? Is it because you got diagnosed with a higher cholesterol level, so now the fear around food is kicking in again? Are there certain body comments or family events? How's the environment in your life going? What are the things you are consuming on social media? You have to identify where we're developing this again, because when you find that, you can at least learn how to be more aware of it, catch it, and make sure that it doesn't take over your life again. You know, so that's one thing.
At least, you know, they said the first step to solving a problem is knowing that you have a problem, and the fact that you know you have a problem, that's your first step. And like what Joe said, is what triggered it and what's causing you to think that way. And that's the next step. And then from there, you can step forward.
Yes. So when it comes to, let's say, because you also asked, like, how can I heal from this? And how can I enjoy food again without being restrictive? So given your diagnosis of high cholesterol, one of the things that we have to focus on here is, how do I incorporate more positive habits to decrease my cholesterol, rather than what are the things I'm supposed to avoid to make sure my cholesterol doesn't raise? Okay, yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's thinking of it in a more value-adding mindset rather than in that restrictive mindset.
Yeah, exactly. Like what Joe said, and I said, like, more movement, which can help your HDL go up, and adding more fiber to help lower your cholesterol levels. Like, people think of just reducing when you can add more fruits, you can add more vegetables, you could add more whole grains, right? And then in terms of like saturated fats, yes, in a way you do have to reduce that, but what can you do in order to not feel like you're depriving yourself?
Being restricted.
Mm-hmm. And being restrictive. And that's just, you know, finding that balance, what to add, right? Like fish, right? People, I feel like people don't eat enough fish. I feel like, no?
I don't know. Some people eat a lot of fish. It really depends on what circles you're running in or who you're talking to. Yeah.
That's true. No, but like, but if you like, if you go to like a country like Japan, like everybody eats fish. But you would think that an island country like the Philippines, we would have so much more fish dishes. And, or I don't know, maybe I'm just ignorant, because I went, like, what, you have bangos, you have, ano, you have mga kilawin, you have all that stuff. But I feel like people here eat a lot more fried pork and beef and chicken. Okay.
So the big part of that is also the structure of our food system. And this actually goes into the second part of, the third question they mentioned. Mm-hmm. So they're an active person and they don't eat much pork, but they usually reach for processed foods because they are more accessible. So we also have to consider your food system. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, what is more likely to be available is your chickens, your beef, and your pork, probably because they tend to have a better shelf life. That's one aspect to it. Another thing is they're also just so much more readily available in restaurants and places to order from. You know, there's not really a lot of fish dishes that you would see in a lot of places, you know? And food systems is a really big part of what affects your relationship with food and even your diet in general. And unfortunately, we don't have full control over that, because there are a lot of things that affect our food choices, being our relationship with food, how we grew up, our accessibility, the affordability, the environment that you have. So in going to the number three, which is you're reaching more for processed foods because they are more accessible, I don't want you to feel bad about this, okay? Because there's only so much we can control about the things that we can do. So what we can focus on is, if I am reaching for more processed foods, what are the types of processed foods or versions of the processed foods that I can find that might have the best nutrient profile for me at the moment? And what are processed foods that incorporate or include the nutrients that I need? Frozen veggies, canned veggies, great fiber sources, canned beans and legumes. There's a lot of like chickpeas and other beans that are also widely accessible and very helpful for us with our cholesterol levels. We can lean towards them as well, if we can or if we want to help us out a bit.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's what disappoints me about society these days. It's like you make fun or you judge someone for getting processed foods, but you don't stop to think that why are they? A lot of them, it's because one, they probably don't have the budget. They don't have the time, you know, and that's literally that's the only thing that's accessible to them. And I feel like if once we step away from that type of mindset, it'll be a lot easier for people to actually move forward in their problems, you know, because the fact they say, although I usually eat processed foods because they are more accessible. Like, I feel like in a way, the tone of the way, maybe I'm just reading into it, right? But I'd be ashamed of myself, right? Like, there's that feeling of guilt, feeling of being ashamed of that's what they're eating. But you shouldn't be ashamed of that because that's the only thing that's accessible, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's sad. Like, not for him, but like just...
in society. Yeah. Like, one time I saw this tweet, though, it's like, why are we promoting or having fast food and all of these things? And I think... it's not fair to put the burden on the individual, right? Because, hello, food. It's not like everyone can afford the fresh produce or anything like that. We have to remember that there's nuances to when it comes to your food choices. One of the biggest and most important ones being the accessibility, you know? So if that's what's keeping you nourished and fueled, that's better than not eating at all.
Yeah. Like, I recently moved to the States, right? And you know, you would think like, oh, they should just buy vegetables. That's cheap. And no, I literally went to a grocery store. I went to get just a small bag of, I'm not sure if it was spinach or if it was a type of cabbage, right? It was $10. It was 600 pesos. Who has money to shell, you know, like to shell 600 pesos just like that? Because, oh, it's cheaper. Yeah, cheaper. And it's more, you know, they can just go buy it. Like, for most people, 600 pesos is what they earn in a week or, you know, what they earn in a day, or it depends, right?
Exactly. That's why when I work with my clients, I always try to make a meal plan as much as possible that revolves around food that they already have or already have access to. And then incorporating some other nutrients here and there that we can find out if, oh, do we have access to this food? Is there a way for me to make this accessible and usable in my routine and in my meal plan? Because if we're going to stick around here and tell you like, oh yeah, just buy like organic spinach and stuff like that, and you're not even going to be able to sustain that, and now that's going to negatively affect even your budget, now you're going to be stressed, is that actually improving your health, right? Of course, in an ideal world, we would reach for more whole foods all the time, but we don't live in an ideal world. And that's okay. So work with what you can and do your best where you can, but don't be so hard on yourself if you can't fit what you would want it to be at the moment. Okay. After knowing about it, let's go to number two. After knowing about it, I have been very conscious. I asked my meal suppliers about the oil that they use. Is this too much? I don't think it's too much because you are concerned. You know, you are stressed and you are feeling anxious about your health. That's valid.
Yeah, you should invalidate yourself for being worried. Everybody has their worries. Everybody gets scared. And that's being human.
Yeah, it's better to know anyways what would be in your food as well. For example, palm oil. Palm oil is actually one of the oils that do have the higher saturated fat. So that's understandable of like why that would be a concern for you. Coconut oil is a bit of both. Little mixed reviews here and there. Some studies show that it increases your LDL and some studies show that it doesn't. But generally, as long as it's not our only oil, I would prefer to have a mix of plant oils as much as possible rather than just having one all the time. So this is a very understandable concern. It's good to look for a place that you feel offers you what you need, and it's okay.
Yep, I agree. Honestly, I don't know much about oils in terms of like coconut oil or palm oil, but one, it's right, it's your body, your choice in that sense. And if it makes you feel better of what goes into your food, then you should do it for your own sake.
Yeah. Now, the other side of this, of course, is to be aware of how it makes you feel to be so worried about the food that you're consuming as well. Because sometimes this worry can really spiral us out into another side of health, which is one, orthorexia, which is your obsession with being healthy, that it becomes unhealthy. That's kind of what we want to be more aware of as well. And it's understandable that you're really stressed because there's anxiety around health. Understandable. Nobody wants to be sick. Nobody wants to struggle or stress about their health. It's like the worst. But stress on its own also impacts our overall health. So that's just something to try to check in with. You know, how much of your worries around health are taking over and what could we do? Which leads us to our fourth one. I have bad anxiety and overthink whether my cholesterol is manageable. We get anxiety, all of these things. Elijah, why don't you share with us some of your tips as someone who can relate?
Yeah, so...
not the cholesterol, just the anxiety.
Yeah, I can relate both ways. I have really... Well, first, let's tackle anxiety first. I too, like Joe knows this, I get so paranoid sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Health anxiety specifically.
Mm-hmm. I've also been searching for psychiatrists to help me, and I have, and it helps. You know, sometimes I journal. But besides that, it's real. It's real. Like that feeling of like impending doom. You're like, what if, do I have cancer? Do I have this disease? Do I have that disease? Oh, why am I palpitating right now? And then you just spiral and you just spiral and you have a panic attack. And I know that feeling so well. And one of the best ways to manage is to just step back and breathe, you know, control your breathing. Think about, the only thing you think about is your breath. Think about what you're feeling. Think about breathing in and out. Breathing in and out until you manage it, until you manage your anxiety, right? And because the more you stress about it, the more anxious you're going to get and the more you're going to spiral. So the best way to get out of that spiral is to just breathe.
But I think it's also important to tap into like breathing exercises also don't work for everyone. So it's not so much about breathing, but grounding. So what can you find that helps ground you? If that's doing like a repetitive task of writing something down in a journal of like the same sentence over and over or something like that. Or if it's to focus on what they say, like the five things you can see, five things you can
smell, hear, touch.
Touch, yeah. Anything that can essentially distract you and bring you back to where you're at is the first step.
Yeah. So for me, it's breathing and sports, actually. Like working out really helps me get out of that cycle.
So one thing also I always tell Elijah when he's struggling with his like health anxiety, when it's like coming up, I always try to tell him to like, okay, focus on the things that you can control in the moment. When I mean control, as in the habits or the things that you can do to continuously take care of your body as much as you can. Like focus on those things. So if it's moving your body more, not too much, just more, maybe getting in more steps maybe, or trying out a new hobby. If it's adding a bit more fiber here and there, because at least when you feel like there's no control going on because of all of these things, we focus on the small things that you do have control over. And the truth is that we have to face the fact of, even if you try to take care of yourself as best as you can, there's still crazy things that are going to happen in the world. So we have to just focus on
things you can control.
Yeah. What we do have our sights on.
Yeah.
You know? And that slowly, hopefully becomes in the routine, in that habit that allows us to
feel more good. At peace. Mm-hmm. No, that's a good thing you brought up. Routine. I think that was a thing that really helped me with my health anxiety was forming a routine, right? We talked about how to get out when you do have an anxiety attack, but a way to avoid it would be to create a routine in a way where, I wouldn't say you're distracting yourself, but mm-hmm. you put yourself in a position where you feel good because you have that routine, whether it be waking up the same day every day, you make your bed, you
same
eat
time.
Breakfast. Same time you make your bed, you go for a morning walk, you exercise, you eat lunch, blah, 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 blah. And you have that you can do every single day. And you realize, oh yeah, I have this thing that I can hold on to, and knowing that I'm making good lifestyle choices, that I'm taking care of my body, even small things. It doesn't have to be like a full blown routine, but mm-hmm. add things where you can do every single day to say that, hey, I'm doing something to better myself in that situation.
Yeah. And not all at once, like one thing at a time.
Yeah,
and
one
another
thing
to look at it as well is the way you talk to yourself, because that's also a big part of health. You know, your self-talk, that also plays a very important role. But most importantly, do talk to somebody if you can, you know, if you have the means to talk to a professional, psychiatrist, psychologist, very helpful.
Yeah, I had two sessions, and even if it were just two sessions, I was given enough knowledge and stuff to take from that I'm able to somehow manage with the anxiety I have. And that's only two sessions, you know. I was lucky to find a psychiatrist that was helpful enough to be like that. And sometimes when you do look for a psychiatrist, it may not be the first one. And so, and that's how it is with mental health sometimes.
Or health in general.
Mm-hmm. And health in general. But never be afraid to seek out help. And if that help that you sought out wasn't what you thought, don't give up, because people are there to help and people are willing to help. And yeah, you shouldn't battle alone.
Okay. So my LDL and non-HDL levels are high, but not at critical points.
Yeah. So let's break that down. So let's break it out into low, good, borderline, and high. So when we're talking about total cholesterol, so that's a combination of your HDL and LDL, a good would be below 200 milligrams to deciliters. So below 200 is good. When you go over 200, you would consider that borderline, up to 239. And anything above 239, you would call high, right? So when you say that they're not at critical points, I'm guessing you're at borderline and you're not at high, or I don't know. That's what I'm getting from that. So if you're not at high and you're at just borderline, for me, that's not bad. It's very manageable. I mean, I don't want to like talk out of my butt and say like, oh, there's a lot of people with higher stuff. And there are like a lot higher, and they do a lot more stuff. They're on statins and stuff to help lower their cholesterol. But I think if you're not prescribed by a physician with any cholesterol lowering medications, I feel like you're still at a point where it's very manageable with lifestyle choices, with what me and Joe were talking about, whether it be exercise, adding more fiber, adding more fruits, and eating more unsaturated fats.
Mm-hmm. There's also something to consider, which is like the genetic factor of most diseases.
100%.
Like you can be doing all of these things and still not be able to manage it because there's just that genetic factor, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and as Filipinos, we're genetically, well, I guess our diet is a main culprit because we don't really prioritize high fiber foods and stuff like that.
Well, a lot of dishes actually are high fiber. It's more of the modern structure of most things now, in the world.
But I think genetically, I feel like Filipinos do tend to have higher cholesterol in general. But I think that could be because, you know, of society and how diet changed throughout the years in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also for like most countries in general, like most diseases are really rising just because we are definitely moving less. We are eating more because, you know, there's just more abundant foods are available as well. Stress is at an all-time high. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think it's at an all-time high. We aren't getting enough sleep. We're not getting quality sleep. You know, there's a lot of things that have really affected. And that's why we always say health is really multifaceted, multi-sectoral.
Multifactorial.
Yeah, there's a word, but I forgot what it is. But
it's composed of multiple aspects, right? Overall, you have mental, you have physical, you have financial health, and you have social health. Those are the four.
Yeah, but
health,
we're talking about like all of the other things that impact your health, being your environment, the system that you have, you know. This is something that I tweeted the other day and a lot of people resonated with, where it's like, how are we expected to eat well, move our bodies, socialize, have good hobbies, get enough sleep, while we are constantly stuck in traffic, we are constantly waiting in long lines, we are stressed, we don't have access to food, all of these things.
Inflation, a lot of stuff you're buying you can't afford anymore.
It's funny. It's like, yeah, it's unfair to also put health just on the individual, where it's just like, yeah, just take care of your health. That's okay. If you're not given the systems as well, in order for you to keep on taking care of yourself. So if you've watched the Netflix documentary, it's like about the Blue Zones. I haven't watched it, but somebody summarized a little bit of it. And what they mentioned is that a lot of the Blue Zone countries or places in the world live long because they incorporate a lot of fiber, a lot of beans, a lot of fish, so a lot of unsaturated fats and fiber and plant-based nutrients, but they also walk a lot. And consider that in the Philippines, where it's like, yeah, you know, you should just walk more. And then you're like, there's no sidewalks. For me to be able to walk, I have to go all the way to a place that is going to be walking safe, which might be an hour, 2 hours away from my house. So that
is. And then on the way, you'll probably get an asthma attack because there's so much smog.
Yeah. And you're just like stuck in traffic for most of your day, you know, to get around, especially now in like December. So, you know, that's just like such a big aspect to it. It's not just that individual, yeah, you're lazy, figure it out. It's also, where are the means as well to help support us as much as possible to maintain this lifestyle?
By the way, sorry, I reread part of the letter. You said it was high. So it is high. So I wouldn't call that borderline. My advice would be to reach out to a physician if you have the time, if you have the resources.
I feel like they probably have.
You think they think
reached out to a physician? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where a lot of the anxiety also comes from.
Is coming from?
Because maybe, I don't know who your physician is, but I feel like a lot of individuals who struggle with their health anxiety as well may have only been told to like, yeah, just like, don't eat this, don't eat that. Or yeah, just lose weight as like that advice. And then that can like spiral into like, oh no, what do I do?
Yeah, well, to be honest, most physicians, we don't have that much nutritional training. Yeah, we know that bad cholesterol is caused by this, high cholesterol is caused by that, do this to increase that. But in terms of like making a well-balanced meal and making a nutritional program, I mean, we don't have that much, you know. And there,
and
there is
that's the, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's what we should advocate for, you know, more nutritional training for our physicians.
I think what we could advocate for is more of a change in the health system in general, where it's
But baby steps, because
it doesn't have to be more nutrition information, because you have dietitians to do that.
More holistic type of, like, I don't know. Because I feel like just saying, oh, lose weight, that's really like super aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Like a way to kind of share or make give advice that isn't scare tactics in health, you know. And I think we're changing towards that for sure, like it's getting to that direction, but I think that's a part, not just doctors, okay, like most of the healthcare in general tend to have scare tactics as something that we focus on, where it's like, oh yeah, if you don't do this, you're gonna have a heart attack and stuff like that. So of course you're gonna be like, what the fudge, you know. And like, I understand where that's coming from, but it could also just not be helpful,
you know. A lot of physicians, it comes from a good place, right? And they do care about what happens to you, and they don't want you to suffer something horrific. But we need more training, because we always talk about patient doctor relationship, right? And I feel like when you have that aggressive mindset, it kind of takes away from that patient-doctor relationship. And I guess we need more training in a way where it's like, hey, your cholesterol is high or whatever, and that's a risk factor for this and this. I'm not telling you that it will happen, but we have to steer away from this. Let's do that. Let's do this. I'll recommend you to a nutritionist, dietitian, you know, stuff like that. And nowadays, more doctors, younger doctors are being trained like that. They're becoming like that, but it's not at the point where we want it, because people still complain. If there's nobody complaining, that means there's no problem for the most part. But we still hear a lot of stories and complaints where it's like, my doctor just said to lose weight, or my doctor just said I was fat, my doctor just said to do this and do that. And it's just like, you know.
Yeah. And again, it's not just the doctors, because even I was trained in my hospital rotation where you're only going to see your patient for 5 minutes and you're never going to see them again. So you have to leave them with like a standing impression of what they can do. So most of the time, dietitians are trained to be like, wag na kumain ng mga alat ha, konti na lang yan, wag na, bawal na yan. Because that's going to stick and that's going to make the patient know what they're supposed to do technically, but it just creates more fear and anxiety around health. And we just like, hopefully we can shift in the patient care aspect, not just for doctors, but for healthcare.
Yeah, actually, it's like to get like, you know, like a viewpoint for you guys. That was the one thing that I tried to like really work on in the outpatient department when I was training in my last year, was like, I'm only given like 10 minutes to interview this person and to basically help them out. How can I do it in such a way where it's meaningful? Because you have such an influx of patients, right? And as much as you want to spend 20, 30 minutes with that one patient, it's just physically impossible, or you're not going to get through all the patients. You're not. And it's like, how do I do it in such a way where I can leave an impact and actually help them without make them more stressed and actually get something out of it?
Yeah, I think that's really the overall struggle too, is like the amount of time you have with your patient, the amount of resources you have. So it's really just an overall system thing, which we don't have control over, which, to bring us back to the letter, it's normal and it's valid for you to feel afraid in your health and to feel anxious about it. So just focus on the things that you really can control at the moment.
Control.
Which is the small habits that you can implement and apply. And remember that it's a journey, but you're definitely not going to be alone in this journey. And hopefully this episode is something that would help you along the way too.
Yeah. You are your leader.
What? Inspiring.
Okay. Take control of your life. Take control of yourself, because you are your own leader.
Stop it. Okay. So yes, thank you again for sending your letter. Hopefully this episode was helpful for you. And any last words, Elijah?
Are you threatening me?
Last words in the episode.
She's holding me hostage.
Why would I threaten you while there is proof? Okay.
Any last words? Oh, thank you guys. I had a wonderful time.
Thank you, everyone. We're out.
Bye-bye.
And that is the end of the episode. Thank you again for listening in, and thank you for sending your letters. If you want to be part of the next episode, then don't forget to follow at the Donut Box Pod on Instagram. And don't forget to follow us here as well. You can follow me at It's Joe Sebastian on Instagram, TikTok, X, Threads, and YouTube. We just hit 30,000 on YouTube, and that's so exciting. So I hope to see you there. You can also follow at healwithjoe.rnd on Instagram for more nutrition things. The Donut Box Podcast is an Anima podcast. And until the next episode, don't forget to follow them for the latest pods. Till the next episode, don't forget, you always deserve to eat.